We're doing Parshat Truma, and our parsha goes over the vessels that we built for the Mishkan. We'll quickly go over the vessels. Our vessel in the Holy of Holies is the Aron. So if we look at the Aron over here, the final view, you see you have two poles, Badei Aron, made of Atzei Shittim, maybe we'll translate that as cedar wood, coated with gold. The Aron itself is Amataim Orko Ve'amaruch Bo. It is two amos long, an amma wide. Yeah. So the Aron has four rings coming out of it, through which the poles go. On top, the Aron itself is made of a layer of gold, an outer box of gold, and then a box of wood, and then an inner box of gold. So you have three layers, actually. This is what it looked like.
They were made separately, and then they were put together.
That's what it seems like from Rashi. Outer box of gold, and then a box of wood, and then the innermost box of gold again. Now, on top of the Aron, you had a kaporet. Kaporet is a slab of gold, from that same slab, they formed two little angel figures called Keruvim. So you might want to take a seat there. You'll see our picture book better. So you have the Aron with the poles on two sides. You have the Kaporet on top with the Keruvim coming out of it. Inside the Aron, we're going to have the tablets, the old tablets, the new tablets, meaning the broken tablets, the fixed tablets. We're going to have a Torah, etc. We'll get to that in a minute. Now, we're not sure where the four rings went and where the poles were. So we have an opinion that says that the rings and the poles were on bottom, like this. So the Aron was carried up high. We have an opinion that says it was on top. Then we have an opinion that says there were two sets of rings, right? Here you have on top. There's an opinion that says there were two sets of rings because there were two sets of poles. There was a set of poles that stayed in permanently, and there was a set of poles that was just there figuratively. Those that were permanent were there for the figure. It should always look like it has poles. It should always look like an arm with poles. And then there were two that you carried it by. Around the Aron, you had a lip that went up that made it look like a crown. The outer layer of gold had a lip that went up, and that made it look like a crown around the Aron. We have three vessels that have that, and they represent the three crowns. So the Aron is going to represent the crown of Torah and the Holy of Holies. Yeah?
The Keruvim were 20 tefachim high, right? But they were going to get to the
10 tefachim high.
And from their head to the top of their wings, that's not another 10 tefachim?
No, from their wings to the kaporas is 10 tefachim.
Nice.
Okay, so here you see the kaporas as it goes down on the Aron.
Well, just a quick question. Why this layer of gold, wood? Gold. I mean, is there anything going on with that?
Yes. So Rav Shlomo Fisher said the following explanation. He said the idea behind it was that you look at the kapores. So kapores is our slab of gold with the angels that the angels are looking down at the Torah. Right, the angels are faced now. And God's voice emanates from between these two angels. And you might think, oh boy, the main thing is the angels. No, they're looking down. So the main thing is the Aron. No, the Aron is a crate. The idea of it being wood is that it's to remind us that it is merely a crate. That they're looking down at the Torah in the crate. Meaning the message of the Keruvim and the Aron is that the essence of the Beit HaMikdash is the Torah in here. And that's the idea that I think Rav Salvechik explained. Why does Rambam write that the Aron is buried in the Beit HaMikdash till today? It's buried somewhere on the Temple Mount. Because Rambam is of the opinion that the Temple Mount still has holiness. So how does it still have holiness? The holiness of the Temple Mount stems from the Torah that's there, from the Aron that's there. The Kodesh HaKodoshim, the Holy of Holies, got its holiness from what? From the Torah, from the scroll of Torah that was there, or the Luchos that were there in the Holy of Holies. So that's why Rambam writes. It's still buried there. It's there. Somewhere deep inside, it's there. Because Rambam is, again, of the opinion that the holiness remains. So if the holiness remained, then it remained because the Aron is still there. Next, we have a mitzvah to build the shulchan. Yes.
How did they open? Did they ever open it? Was there a door for the aron?
Not that I know of. It says they opened it sometimes, but to my understanding, it meant lifting the kaporas off.
Oh, that's because Goliath ready in Shaul, and seems like he could snatch it out.
Right. Seems like there was a. The way to open it was to take off the kaporas. I'm unaware of any other way to open it. In this book, they don't show it. I don't see it at any rate. There are opinions as to what went into the Aron. Anyway, different opinions as to how much was there in terms of what were the contents of the Aron. Here they show it. Whether you had a Torah scroll inside, together with the tablets that were whole, whether you had the whole tablets plus the broken tablets and a Torah scroll on a shelf outside. That's because you're starting. You notice? I never even thought to think of that.
I don't know about that.
Okay, right. I don't even know about that. Wow. Okay, good point. I like that. Wow. Good for you. I guess the author's Ashkenazi, then Stern. Didn't dawn on him to put a different Torah scroll there. Okay, you're right. We have no idea what the Torah scroll looked like that was there. Very nice. Okay, good point. 100%. Okay. He's got a good point. So we build the Shulchan. The Shulchan is made again of Atzei Shittim, a very light, good wood called Shittim wood. And then it is coated with gold. Now the Shulchan is going to have many components to it. What's going to happen with the Shulchan, again, we're going to have a lip that comes out around. It's going to look like a crown. The Shulchan is composed of basically four legs that form the frame. Right? Four legs and wood that goes around. And then another slab of wood that lies on them. And that's our Shulchan part one. The next thing we're going to have is we're going to have to place 12 loaves of bread on the Shulchan. So how do you place 12 loaves of bread on the Shulchan?
Matzah.
So the Torah describes it as put in karotav, kapotav, ksotav, menekiotav. What's the Torah talking about? So we have a tradition that they had a shelving system. That basically the Shulchan had on alternate sides, it had, let's see if we have a picture of the finished product here. It's covered up, 1 second. On alternate sides, the Shulchan had a shelving system. Here we go. So when you looked at the Shulchan, you didn't really see the center table because you needed a pile of two sets of six loaves piled up on the Shulchan. So if you were looking at the Shulchan, you didn't see this. What you had to see was really a shelving system that would hold 12 loaves of bread. So if you had plain shelves, what would happen? The bread would turn moldy. You put bread on a shelf. What part of the bread turns moldy first? The part that's on the ground, right? No air hits that. So the shelving system was a system through which air could go and keep the bread fresh. What would you do? You would take three half pipes and put them there to support the bread. So that way, you have half pipes, you don't have a flat surface, you have a little bit of support on six places, right? Each half pipe has two sides, and those half pipes are going to, right, half pipes, like are going to support the bread. So you can have six piles of bread, not lying one on top of the other, and the bread gets air flowing in between, so it stays fresh. So this is what it looked like. Okay, you had on alternate sides of the shulchan, you had two slabs of wood coated with gold, which would form the shelving system, the two sides of the shelf, and in between these two sides, you would put the half pipes. See this? So these are the half pipes that support the bread. Okay?
So these half pipes, the bread was laid perpendicular to, or...
It's a good question, yeah. Well, the bread had a special form.
Okay.
So, I mean, look at the bread, and then see over here how it's laid?
I don't see any bread in there. I just see
the here, these are loaves of bread. The bread looked like that.
Really?
Here. Yeah, the bread was, it was very hard to make the bread.
Oh.
The bread looked like a U.
Okay, so that was just the shell.
Folded inward, no.
Wow.
This is the bread.
Okay.
It was very hard to make it. It was a work of art.
Yeah.
There was only one family who knew how to make it.
And they wouldn't tell
so it didn't
anybody.
Cave in.
Very interesting. Why in that shape? I guess I'm messing with
that. That was our tradition.
Okay.
That's what Hashem wanted. It's not like, you see the shape of the bread? This shape, yeah.
The family wouldn't tell their secret.
Right? This is the bread. This is the table, which you can barely see. And the table also has two poles to carry it. And these are the supportive systems for 12 loaves of bread, which would be changed every Shabbos with fresh bread. And there was a special miracle that when you took it off, it felt warm and fresh, like it had just been baked. Okay, now, in the middle, in between the bread, you had two spoons, or two cups of gold, in which they would put pure frankincense, pure Levona. And they would be burnt over there on the table. These incense, these are the two cups. So these, like kapotav, it's called, like bowls. So this was placed in between the two piles of bread and offered right here, in between the two piles. Okay? So on Shabbos, when they would pull out the old bread and put down the fresh bread, which was basically done, you'd push off the old bread with the new bread so that there were always bread on the shelf. Don't ask me how it was done. I don't understand how you didn't end up turning over all the half pipes by, you know, pushing off the bread. But maybe two Kohanim that did it would really support it off the half pipe so that they didn't roll over as you were pushing on the bread.
Why'd you have room between the two?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. We have to sit down and do the math. How much space there was in between? The Gemara does the math. I don't remember it. On Shabbos, we had a mitzvah also to burn the Ketores, the Levona Zaka, to burn it, the pure frankincense over here. As we put in the new bread, we would also burn those two cups of Levona Zaka.
Where would they burn it exactly?
On the table. It was on the table in between the two piles of bread. There was a space there. That's what the Gemara discusses, how big the space was. Yeah. Okay. Next, we move on to the menorah. So the menorah is made of one slab of solid gold. And again, looking at the final picture, it's not clear because Rambam describes one thing and draws another. And he says it's like this and not like that. If you look in the Rambams, the different versions have different pictures. So coming back to our picture. So our menorah has a base and a central post that comes out of the base that will have the central flame. And then three branches coming out to the right, three branches to the left. The Torah tells us you have to have these little balls of gold going up. called Pamonav. It's bells. So you have. It says. Kaftor. Sorry, not Pamon. Kaftor. What we call today a button. In the Torah is called Kaftor. So you have over here, like every place that a branch protrudes, you have Kaftor. And then the Torah says you should have three Gvi'im. You should have three shapes of goblets under the final goblet that would house the oil of the menorah. So that's, again, the Torah gives us an exact description. And we have over here the important medrash about how Moshe Rabbeinu went up and asked Hashem how to do it, and Hashem told him, and he went back down, and then he came back up, and he said, Ribbono Shel Olam, I forgot, please tell me again, and then a second time, and then a third time, and he couldn't get it. And that's very important, the idea that Moshe couldn't get something, even though Hashem taught it to him again and again and again. He didn't get it. That's very important.
The Tzalo got it,
yeah. And then there are steps leading up to the menorah. It's not clear why those steps were necessary, but there were steps.
It wasn't higher up.
It was three steps up, but it's not clear why you needed them. Meaning the total menorah's height wasn't so tall. I'm saying the total menorah's height was 18 tefachim.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? You see these pictures, you think they went up to the sky.
Right, no. So 18 tefachim is this tall. Saying you don't have a problem, right? Let's do it. Let's measure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Okay, so it's up here. Someone who's of average height can light that. So you take three steps.
It's interesting that there's steps and not a ramp.
Right, right. It's a very good point. I don't remember seeing an interpretation as to why. I don't remember. The Torah calls the menorah pure because the menorah is a vessel that never gets the blood of a living creature. It's not like the mizbech. Other things got offered blood.
The bread.
And the menorah, the shulchan is also called pure because the shulchan also didn't get blood. Very nice. Okay. So that's our menorah. Let's see. Next, the Torah describes the building of the Mishkan. So we move forward. For whatever reason, the Torah skips the Aron. That we will only meet next week, the building of the Aron. Now we go over to the Mishkan. Okay, so the Mishkan is made of beams. Atzei Shittim, again, this wood, whatever it is, shittim, maybe cedar wood.
Is there? What's with the word shittim? As in there's the shittim, center of the mizbeah, underneath the mizbeah, right? Shittim. Right, we said sheet is to put down, right?
Why don't you show me it inside?
Show you what?
The shittim of the mizbeah.
No, that the sheet in the rug.
That's with the taf. This is with the tet. Okay, shetiyah. There is shat, like shit. It's with the taf. Two different words. So we have atzei shitim, these cedar trees, and they're coated, right? And they're coated with gold. And then they have sockets made of silver, adonim, made of the silver donations of the Jewish people. So this is what it looks like. You have the cedar wood, which is planks that look like this. And then on the bottom, they're going to have two sockets that they go into. The wood is going to be coated with gold, and the sockets are of silver. So the Mishkan on the outside looks like this. You got gold and silver base. Every beam of the Mishkan had two sockets. The beams on the bottom would have a marking so that they would know which beam belonged where, how to match them up. It doesn't say this, so I'm not sure, but Chazal say it was so that whatever was holiest and the Holy of Holies would stay there. Meaning there are different gradations of holiness in the Mishkan, so they would stay together. At the top of the beams, you needed to connect them. So you had these cracks where they had rings that would hold the beams together, what's called tabat. So that's this idea up here, that you had little cracks at the top of the beams, and the rings would hold the beams together. So the Mishkan was actually held together more on top than on bottom.
This is what they thought Moshe took, right? The tabaot?
I thought it was the vavim. I think so. Okay, next you had posts. So around the Mishkan, the beams had, what are these called? A beam. If you want to hold it together and you have these sockets that a post runs through it, bariach is like a door's, what do you call it, a latch? When you have a latch that runs through it so you can't open it, a lock that latches. What's that called? A latch, a post? So you have the equivalent here. And then there's the Briach HaTichon. There's a center beam that goes around. Rashi says that center beam, there was, in the middle of all these pieces of wood, there was a path for one pole, and it was a miracle. Moshe moved it, like put it through, and it kept going all around and around. Meaning, because metal can't turn corners, right? So it says that was a miracle, and the miraculous middle beam that held the, held them together. So here we see again that you had them held together on top with the rings, and along the center you had three brackets, three posts that ran through it. And here you see the middle one. Rashi talks about Priach HaTichon, the middle post that held the whole frame together.
And I'm sorry, but for lack of a better term, we're talking about the perimeter fence.
Yeah.
Okay.
The outer encasing of the Mishkan. Okay. Meaning, yeah. Let's see if we have a good picture here. There. So all of this is going to be covered, right? We're going to cover it ultimately with all these cloths.
Okay.
That's what I mentioned, that I didn't mention it here, I'm sorry. I gave a different glance, I forgot. The question is how they had light in here. They must have had lamps or something inside, because it was all covered. Meaning it's like a tent that's completely closed. So where did the light come from?
Through the fabric?
I don't think so. There were so many layers of fabric. They must have had lamps inside. Or else you want to say it was a miracle. Okay, that's always a good answer. But you have to prove it.
When we talk about the... Oh, I guess we'll talk about the fabric later. But there were, you know, there was an eagle and a lion, right?
We're about to get there. Okay.